All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome to a world premiere broadcast. I couldn't be more excited. We have a brand new show with everybody today. It's a show that people are going to really enjoy. It is going to be called Legal Talk with Jeff Nierenberg, a fantastic attorney in the Delaware Valley. Jeff, how are you, sir?
Hello, Joe. Thank you for having me and really excited with the new show.
Yep, and I am very excited as well. I've been looking forward to it for some time. Before we get into introducing yourself, first of all, tell our listeners a little bit about what you hope to accomplish with the new show.
So I'm really, really excited to have to be here, and I thank you for inviting me to do this. This is something that I think we discussed last time. This is always a passion of mine that I've always wanted to do and get involved in more. So I appreciate you and WWDB. My goal is to educate the public about not only me and what my firm does, but maybe help the listener better understand what a plaintiff's personal injury lawyer does, how we do it, and how we evaluate and go about our business and make people smarter consumers so that when they need a lawyer or they need to consult during their bad day or their tough time, they'll have more education about how to hire a lawyer here in Philadelphia.
And interesting, we're going to talk about some of the cases and some interesting situations that you've been in and great opportunities to talk about, certain situations where people, need a personal injury attorney and who've actually gone through it and had experiences that have impacted you throughout your career. One of the things I'd like to do right now is if you would introduce the Delaware Valley to yourself and talk about your career path, how you got where you are, number one, and then talk about the firm.
So, again, my name is Jeffrey Nierenberg. I am born and raised in Philadelphia. I graduated from Abington High School from the Elkins Park region, currently live in Plymouth Meeting, PA. I am a proud Penn State Nittany Lion graduate and was completely devastated when Jerry Sandusky and the scandal happened and Joe Paterno went down, but that's a different conversation.
Well, it's interesting because I have, I know some guys that played at Penn State. They won't even talk about it. But that was such a long time ago. It's great to see, Penn State obviously back to where, the glory years, and it's great to see everybody back. But that was a blemish not on Penn State, but just on society itself, for crying out loud. We're going to talk about, situations like that, because people don't realize in some cases can be a part of a personal injury case. So we'll definitely hit on that. I'll continue.
No problem. So I went on to Widener Law School in Wilmington, Delaware, and graduated with so many people from this area that went on to become successful judges, personal injury attorneys, criminal lawyers, and I see and work with these people all the time. And between Temple and Widener, it makes up a large, large percentage of the criminal personal injury lawyers in Philadelphia. So our local law schools have done a great job of feeding to the market and have so many fine attorneys and judges as a result. After graduating, I worked for a few years for various personal injury law firms for maybe 6 years with varying degrees of success and failure. Some of the bosses were great, some were not so great, but the bottom line was that I began to develop relationships with clients and doctors and other lawyers and realized that personal injury law is based on your experiences, your relationships, and going out and getting clients, really, and building a practice, which I began to do at an early age. I also realized early on that personal injury and plaintiff's law is really something you kind of need to do on your own with your own organization. It's fine to work at law firms, and at least for me, I'm speaking for me.
Sure.
I realized after 5-6 years that I needed to go on my own, and I needed to be my own boss and make the selections of partners, associates, and secretaries in order to be happy and in order actually to run the law firm the way I wanted to run it. And I always told my wife and friends that I think I learned a lot about what to do at the four or five law firms that I worked at, but I learned an equal amount of what not to do.
Right.
And I remember like writing a chart down of good and bad and things I'm going to do and things I'm not going to do. And so much of it is implemented today. And I've been a lawyer for 28 years. I went on my own around 1999. I've had partners, I've had associates, I've had all types of support staff come and go, law clerks, friends that I've given jobs to with mixed success, and have gone through the pandemic having to fire people and hire people during really the most difficult times. And I'm still standing, and I have a beautiful office here at the Duane Morris Plaza, which is 30 South 17th Street. I have a law suite with great lawyers and secretaries and people that I've really come to become my work family and have helped me through everything and really have been my support and rock during this pandemic where most people weren't coming to the office. And I'm proud to say that we have a great group here of about 18 people here at the Duane Morris Plaza, and I'm fortunate to be part of it.
Now, interesting. You know, having started your own practice, and by the way, I always marvel at that because, you know, it's an entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, in other words, you're a lawyer, but you also have to be a business person. But having a boutique firm, you know, is, you know, there are tremendous benefits for clients to retain a boutique firm. Talk about that and what some of them benefits are for somebody that wants to retain, doesn't want one of those big conglomerates.
So to me, there are so many benefits. It boggles the mind for me seeing how big everything's gotten in this country, starting with Amazon at the top, Target, Best Buy, big box stores. Well, the law has followed that model. And we now have the Morgan & Morgans, and we have Simon & Simon and Rand Spear and Lundy Law and Ponlahanki, and things have gotten very big in my profession. Yeah. The way I and other small boutique firms separate themselves is because you hire a person. You actually hire a lawyer and a staff that has constant contact with you, takes your phone calls, sits down and meets with you, will send emails back and talk to you after hours. And it really is, it's trite, but that personal touch separates what I do and what other much bigger law firms do. In a way, I was very scared in the beginning when things went big in my profession.
Okay.
Because cases were being sucked up by these big conglomerate law firms, and guys like me began to fear for the future. And we would meet, and we would talk, and we would have all types of text chains and email chains. And we would plot and plan, but we realized after a period of time, people came to us. People wanted to switch. We were starting to see, at least I started to see, a great number of people that went to a big box law firm and just were unhappy with the service they were receiving. And I began to get more people from those firms than I was losing. And what turned into a point of contention and made me nervous, and you know, it was hard for me to sleep at night in the beginning of all this.
Sure.
With all the ads that you see for some of these big firms, and the more money I had to spend to advertise. But as time went on, people realized that I cared, that I called them back, that I sat and met with them, that I became sort of a friend and part of the family for some of these people that I've now been with for 28 years. I have clients that go back to the early, mid-90s that have referred me friends, family, brothers, sisters, aunts, their wives, their kids. And that isn't always the case, I think, with the big law firms because you don't meet with lawyers.
You don't get the personal experience as much.
Yeah, you speak to a paralegal, a secretary, a law clerk. Rarely do you get to actually talk to the lawyer, not only about your case, but people talk about everything and their life and their hopes, their dreams, and things that upset them. And again, you become a bit of a closet psychologist on top of being a lawyer.
And having said that, they also get to talk to Jeff Nierenberg, the guy on the sign on the placard.
Right.
And having that, you mentioned, a lot of your clients are relatives of other and friends of previous clients. Sincerest form of flattery?
Absolutely. So I always like to say that so much of my clientele is repeat customers, people that have been with me for years and years and years. So that's the greatest compliment that can be paid to a lawyer or really any professional. They've come back because they like you, they trust you. And just today, a guy called me after 10 years, and his son was in a horrible drunk driving accident where the son was a passenger. A boy died. They were in high school, and he wants me to handle, you know, his son's case. And the boy is at Abington Hospital with surgeries and fractures. And, he, you know, it's the most horrific accident of a 19-year-old boy. But the last time I represented this family was 10 years ago. So they thought enough of me from 10 years ago to hire me in a case that's significantly bigger than what they came to me 10 years ago. This is a very, very significant injury car accident case.
You know, it's interesting because I've had the conversation, being owning your own practice is simple but complex in the fact that, there may be an outline for it, but you not only have to be an outstanding attorney that does a good job, but you also have to be personable so that individuals or you have to have the demeanor and the approachability for individuals to feel comfortable. And so it's there's a lot going on, and you're running a business.
And that's the hard part. So many professionals, lawyers, doctors, psychologists, dentists, are great at what they do, but they miss the whole business aspect, and they don't pay attention to QuickBooks, and they don't have regular conversations with their bookkeeper and their accountant, and they get tripped up because they just are not interested in my opinion, at times, the more important aspect of an entrepreneurial pursuit, which is the business.
And a part of that is marketing.
Right.
So it's not enough. I mean, that's a heavy load. And the fact that you've been here, how many years? 20?
So I'm 28 years, 22 years in my own practice.
Yeah. So I think you're pretty good. I think it looks like you're going to make it.
But I hope so. After all the time, effort, and money spent.
But when you get that call, and that's a horrific, horrific call. And one of the things I don't think people understand, along with all, the legal expertise and all that, is what it takes to be able to handle that call, and be able to meet with the family. I mean, that's a father that I'm sure is as devastated as the day is long, thanking God that it wasn't his child that is the one that is deceased. But even so, it's such a heavy situation. How do you balance your emotions from being obviously professional and personable, and at the same time, trying to be sensitive, which you are naturally, but I'm just saying there's a balance there between you have to represent these individuals, and also you're like a counselor. I mean, and keeping that demeanor during such a difficult time, because I'm sure the individual you're talking to is just devastated.
So this happened 2 days ago. I got the call. The first hour was the father, and then the mother was patched in, and I just listened for an hour.
Yeah.
And as they graphically describe a driver and four passengers, one of which that goes through the windshield and dies, who's the best friend of my kid client. And so the first hour is just listening and almost crying along. They're crying, of course.
Of course.
Telling me the story. And I have two kids. I have two daughters in college and a son in fifth grade. So here's a 19-year-old boy, same exact age as one of my daughters. So I teared up and I cried, because not only do I know this family, the story is beyond words. So the first hour is just listening. And then the second hour was starting to get a game plan together to try to let them understand what needs to happen next.
Yeah.
And make a plan and try to get their attention and say, all right, we have to do X, Y, and Z. It doesn't need to be done today or tomorrow, but here's the things that we have to start to think about. And we put together a plan. I emailed it to them. I followed up the next day, and slowly but surely we're crossing off the things that need to be done in order to investigate. On top of it, it's a drunk driving incident of a kid, to figure out all the aspects of the party that they were at, the place where they purchased the liquor, the insurance from the boy's car who was driving and was driving drunk, their insurance policies. You have to look at the parents' insurance policies. They're not together. So mom has a policy, dad has a policy, and the 19-year-old boy has a policy. So it's a complex case where the kid has 5 fractures and 4 surgeries and has been in the hospital for more than 2 weeks with really no end in sight to the doctoring. He'll be treating for a very, very long time. And being the husband of a wife who's a PhD in psychology, I stress to them the importance of finding a really good psychologist. Either I help them or they help themselves through the hospital, but he needs to be speaking to somebody immediately because, again, he's 19 and the physical injuries will heal. The mental injuries may never heal if he doesn't get the right treatment soon.
Was he sitting in the back seat?
He was a back seat. He happened to be belted in the back seat, but the one that died wasn't. Went through the windshield. In the middle. Right. Yeah, the middle person doesn't have a seatbelt on occasion.
He was so the person in the back seat in the middle was the one that passed away?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Went through the windshield and died.
So basically, as fate would have it, he got in the car later, one step later, if he got in a little bit earlier.
Twist
of
fate.
As parent, it's got to be devastating. When you,
the parents are just so happy that their son is alive.
Is alive.
Because the pictures, the video, all the descriptions are that everybody could have died.
Yeah.
He hit I think the drunk driver hit a median and then hit 2 telephone poles and the car was obviously destroyed. And all people are in critical condition, all still in the hospital 2.5 weeks later.
I mean, thoughts and prayers to those families.
Yes.
And certainly, but that is paints kind of a picture of the type of situations as an attorney that you're walking into. It's not just, and by the way, you know, I've seen individuals with a seemingly bad, not a bad back injury, in work, like they twisted something that turned out to be catastrophic down the road. So there are typically, when they walk in your office, everything's a serious type of situation. When you are talking to a family like that, and part of that conversation, talk about, because as complex as that could be, it may seem to a layperson like me, or even the parents or some, that it's a cut and dry case, and we all know that no matter what the case is, no matter what it is, insurance companies are not in the business of giving away funds. They're in the business of collecting them. They're and making money for their stockholders, not paying it out. No matter how obvious it is, how important is part of that conversation, setting expectations? We talk about bedside manner. And communications, that all starts at the first call, right?
Absolutely. And this is this case was a good illustration of setting expectations and educating people. And this particular family of a mother, a father, and a son, to them, and they're right, this is a multi-million dollar case. This is a case where a son, a 19-year-old boy, has catastrophic injuries. He has multi-million dollar injuries, but I had to explain to the family that we're guided by insurance. We're guided by the insurance of the drunk driver. Many people in the country and in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania carry minimal policies, no policies. Half the drivers in Philadelphia have no car insurance. So, how much insurance does the drunk driver have? That's one question. And there's 4 people involved, and one of them's a death casualty case. So that case obviously looms large over the rest of these people. And then we look to see what insurance is in the family, mom, dad, son. Well, that will guide also what is available to this family and to this boy. And then we look to see if there's a social host issue with parents running a party that they knew of and served the kids.
Yeah.
And where do they purchase the alcohol?
It's so interesting you say that. I coach football, high school football, and we had a situation where parents did that.
Right.
And their theory, and it was a kid on the team, the parents, and you think it's safer because, rather than the kids driving, okay, well, somebody always gets away and does. And somebody got hit. There was a fight. It busted up. Mm-hmm. And we sat the guy down, and he said, well, we did it because we didn't want them drinking up at the baseball park, right? Or the field.
Unsupervised.
Right. But guess what? There's no winner in that situation, and you can't control everything. And it just was a poor decision, even if it was well-intentioned.
And you find, as a lawyer going through those cases, the parents that are good-minded, that want to try to do the right thing,
yeah,
they're home, their kids have a party, and I've had daughters be in the situation.
Sure.
You figure, okay, we're home, they're going to have a few kids over.
Yeah,
well, that number,
Better
safe here than somebody else's right. house. I'm a lawyer, my wife's a psychologist. We have a handle on this.
Right, right.
Five people turns to 10.
10.
10 yeah. goes to 15. Then you go down 2 hours later and there's 47 kids
yeah.
in your basement, and there's always a few of them that are out of control.
Right.
That you can't control.
Absolutely.
And then if something happens and you're home, it's just so easy to charge the parents for being home with the party.
That's right.
And it almost, and what I've learned is that being not home, being on vacation, being at dinner, and not being home if the cops knock on your door for that situation, you can't really charge the parents
right.
if they're not home. But if they're home, they're aware, but they don't really know what's going on, and something happens, you run the risk of being charged and arrested as if you're just as guilty as the person that got out of control and caused the problem.
And this also could be what we would call a dram shop, right? In other words, if it was a case where at a bar or a nightclub, which I happen to be very familiar with because I was in that business for a long time, and there's really, you never, no matter how hard you work, and no matter how hard you try, as an owner of a bar, a restaurant, or a club, you're never in complete control.
No way. I mean, for you as a nightclub owner, that must have kept you up at night at times. I mean, obviously, serving visibly intoxicated people is a no-no.
Absolutely.
But it happens all the time. How do we know? How do you really know?
Well, I'll tell you how you don't really know, because theoretically speaking, friends have friends. The drunk person may not go up and get the drinks.
Right.
They may get them. And if you're not supervising that, and this goes at, by the way, at a home, it's why you got to have a zero tolerance policy. And you have to, if you can't control one thing, you have to control another. So I would have security all over the place, not just at the bar, but also if somebody stumbled out the door, they weren't going anywhere.
Right.
The point I'm making is a situation like that, you know, once, especially with young kids, it's impossible to control. But unfortunately, and this is for parents that are out there that, you know, probably think in a common sense way, that it's, you know, they can handle the situation. You can handle the situation.
You can't.
And then, you know, the last thing they ever want to have to do is you know, not only bury a child, but be forced to you know, look at their child in the same way that those parents are looking at theirs in a hospital with devastating injuries.
So I just say to parents, some parents want to be the cool parents, and they get pressured by their kids.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of families where the kids sort of rule the roost, or they're the power brokers of the family.
Yeah.
But all I can say as a lawyer, as a parent, and as an observer of these situations, you can't control them, and you're at risk. Your hard work, you know, as a professional or business owner in the community comes crashing down, and the police love, and the media loves to name lawyers and doctors and business owners who get involved in situations where people are hurt at their house with parties in high school and in college. And everything's well-meaning, but you can't control what you can't control.
When you said expect, what do you say to the parents or to any client? I don't, maybe they fell off their bike, okay? Or maybe it was a dog bite, or maybe it was... But, you know, so that they're not their own worst enemy during that process. So this case is a catastrophic injury case that you're talking about. But in any situation, this could be a year to 2 year wait with individuals that are already suffering the first day they come in. How do you talk about that conversation so that they don't self-destruct in 3 weeks calling you to find out when they're getting a settlement?
Right. So that's probably the hardest thing, because you're meeting those people on their worst day or one of their worst days. And they want justice. They want answers.
And they want it soon.
And they want it soon. They want instant gratification. And you explain to them that State Farm and Allstate and Progressive and bars and liquor stores are not meant as a cash register for you, and that an investigation has to occur. The police have to put together a very, very detailed police report, including the death of a 19-year-old. That's going to take time. Yeah. Everybody, I always tell my clients, please don't talk to insurance companies, investigators. I've had clients accept $5,000 settlements on cases that were worth $500,000 because they're not in the right mind, and they just make mistakes because their mind is mush after an accident like that. So I just try to talk to them, calm them down, give them – I think it's important to get a playbook together, like in sports. You need to tell people the steps that they're going to need to take to get from point A to the finish line. And I think when people hear that and they're able to see you make progress ever so slowly, they will trust you and realize that it does take a long time. There are many aspects to this case, and it won't happen that quickly.
Let's talk about what defines personal injury and the type of cases that you handle, ranging from, of course, the catastrophic injury, auto accident that you're talking about, personal injury, and the types of cases that you handle. There's a wide array of that. Talk about that.
So I pretty much focus my energies on handling car accidents of all kinds, whether that is a septic case, an Uber case, a Lyft case, anything motor vehicle based, I handle. If you're a pedestrian, I handle it if you're hit by a car. I've handled thousands of bike accidents, motorcycle accidents. I've handled dog bite cases. There's so many dogs that are vicious and terrible in our communities. And unfortunately, people come with horrific injuries. And some of the worst cases are when you see just any beautiful young person, a girl in particular, with horrific dog bite wounds. So that is very, very prevalent in Philadelphia. Truck accidents. You see a lot of truck accidents and bus accidents in Philadelphia. So I am seeing a ton of Uber and Lyft cases now. That's what we're really seeing the most of recently.
One of those things that, there's a wider, a slip and falls and trip and falls. You would call that premise liability?
That's a premises liability case, and it can include something falling on you. You falling on over a defect, a pothole, ice, water, or debris at the supermarket. If a chair breaks and you fall and get hurt, that's a premises liability case. So that's a pretty large catch-all that handles a wide variety of cases. And I've handled every type of premises slip and fall type of case.
When an individual has a situation, typically speaking, depending upon, talk about an auto accident, one of the things that's such a big deal, and I think you and I have talked about it in the past, and we're going to go to the break in a minute, but auto insurance is such a big deal. And we're going to also talk about, so you mentioned Lyft and Uber, and there's an interesting situation there with they have insurance requirements. And so in some cases those are beneficial, obviously, because they're a business, but how important how important is the auto insurance, not only with the driver who got injured, but the individual who hit them, if there was that type of injury, does that play? Because you would think that somebody says, well, I got a catastrophic injury, but if there's not insurance involved, that can impact the case. Talk about the importance of auto insurance to any case that involves an automobile.
So that's the biggest misconception in the law for the public in general. They just think, all right, my mom died. There was a car accident. I've heard the numbers, the ranges are $500,000 to $3 million.
Yeah.
And the lawyer has to explain to them that the person that hit them either had no insurance or minimal. In Pennsylvania, a minimal policy is $15,000 over $30,000. So to be legal in Pennsylvania, it's $15,000. So imagine telling these parents, not this, these parents that I just signed up, but another case where there's either no insurance and mom's dead, or there's $15,000 of insurance. And there's a legal fee, there's costs for the hospital bills, and there's costs for me to get the $15,000, and you're going to get $8,000 when the dust settles.
Unbelievable.
For mom's death. So I would say the single biggest thing is, if you own a car, is to get the right insurance.
So what we're going to do is we're going to definitely delve into that area after we go to break, because I think there's going to be a lot of surprised people. By the way, what you just said is, kind of shocking, and I'm sure a lot of people have been shocked to think that just because there's a catastrophic situation, the actual outcome of a case in regards to recovery has a lot, financial recovery and justice relies heavily on the insurances involved. We're going to have more from our grand launch of Legal Talk with Jeff Nierenberg after the break.
Women Heart is in a race to save lives. Heart disease is the number one killer of women. It's 80% preventable if you know the facts. Millions of women are living with or at risk of different types of heart disease, like AFib, which is a type of irregular heartbeat. It affects both women and men, but women with AFib have a higher risk of stroke and death than men. Get educated. See your doctor. Know the facts. Diet and exercise are key to staying healthy. Know the risks. Women Heart does something really unique, solely focusing on women and providing peer-to-peer support. To win this race, we all have to do it together. Our hearts beat as one. To learn more, visit womenheart.org.
Hi, I'm Connie Britton, and I want to share with you the experience of Donna in Washington. She writes, "I got injured about 5 years ago. I was let go when, because of the injury, I couldn't keep up with my schedule. I've tried to find other work, but I'm 68 now. No one wants to hire someone that old. This week is tough, though, because I had to get my tooth fixed. So I only have $10 in my checking account. But it will be okay. I at least have food because of this pantry. Millions of people face hunger. Some every day, just like Donna. The Feeding America network of food banks helps provide over 6 billion meals to people in need each year. Learn more at feedingamerica.org. Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Legal Talk with Jeff Nierenberg. This is a brand new show on WWDB Talk 860. Real excited about the future of the show. We're having a frank conversation about some of the painful parts that comprise personal injury law and catastrophic injury. We've talked about a devastating accident where people, there's a loss of life, and all those type situations. And a lot of them come down to, when it comes to a recovery, unfortunately, you would think it would be just who's got the best lawyer, right? Everybody thinks, I got a great lawyer. If there's no insurance or auto insurance involved, and like Jeff said, you're 50%, a ballpark figure of the individuals that are underinsured or have no insurance in Philadelphia, and if you're unfortunate enough to get in an accident and somebody hits you like that, and you don't have a good insurance policy, and they don't, well, you may be up the creek without a paddle. So let's kind of cover that, Jeff. The auto insurance discussion is something we've talked about in the past on other shows with you. you know, I watch, we watch, you and I like sports. We watch the ball game. We see flow. We see the little gecko, and we see we only get you what you need, and everybody's real nice. But the fact of the matter is that during those commercials, they're typically only talking about how much money, you know, that they can save you for the insurance, but they don't talk about some of the important areas of auto insurance that can literally be the difference between a life that's ruined, and I mean financially and devastated, physically, you know, if somebody's unlucky enough to get, you know, terribly injured and can never recover. The type of insurance can be the difference between having a life that's completely torn apart, the ability to have a future. Talk about auto insurance in the elements of it that people don't know and that they should know.
So the biggest misconception is we watch television, like you said. We're heading into Super Bowl Sunday.
Yep.
And you're going to see Geico, Progressive, Liberty Mutual, State Farm, all of the big insurance companies advertise.
The Rogers rate.
Jake at State Farm. And people are going to be spending $7.5 million per 30 seconds for that commercial.
Sure.
And they're going to stress how much money they're going to save you on car insurance. But I would submit to you that is the biggest mistake that you can make, because not having the right car insurance, especially in Philadelphia and urban areas in general, the suburbs of Philadelphia, are going to cause you so much heartache in the long term that you will regret and rue the day that you cheaped out on car insurance.
Well, in a sense, though, if you listen to the commercials, and I'll be watching TV, well, I'll be watching the ball game with my wife, and I'll see those commercials, and in a sense, they're not lying. They're only just talking about, you know, saving people money. They're just not educating people at all on bodily harm coverage. So people think, how many times have clients walked in and said, well, don't worry about it, I got full coverage. And at that point, you know, if they find out, you know, that they may find out that full coverage has nothing to do with bodily harm and that they are not, you know, covered for the injuries that they have. How often has that happened?
Sadly, much of the time. More than half the time. So more than half the time, people say, I have full coverage. I'm fully covered. I'm good, Jeff. And I'm saying, ma'am, can I have a copy of your policy? Or do I have your permission to get the policy? I'll find out that they have a state minimum 1530 policy where they can get up to $15,000 and all the participants can get a total of $30,000. Which is heartbreaking to me, because many people come in with horrific injuries and they have cases that are worth far in excess of six figures. And I have to break the news to them that there's $15,000 available. The second coverage is called uninsured motorist. And that's the coverage that you get when somebody hits you, they have no insurance, you can make a claim against your own company for uninsured motorist. Sadly, many people don't have that as part of their coverage. It doesn't cost a lot of money, but it's overlooked often. And again, with 50% of the people not being insured, you not having uninsured motorist means it's devastating. It means a lot of times I have to tell you, you don't have a case. The other coverage is underinsured motorist. So in the case that we were just talking about, the catastrophic drunk driver case, I'm going to get money from the drunk driver's insurance, but I then can turn around to his insurance company and get underinsured motorist coverage. The more you have, the more you get. If you only have $15,000, that's all you get. In the case that we described, that could be a multi-million dollar case, but if the defendant drug driver has $15,000 and you have $15,000, that's the max you can get. And you have to tell the parents, here's $30,000, but your son's case was worth $3 million. So not understanding auto insurance, or at least consulting with an agent, a lawyer, or someone that you trust that understands what they're doing, it's a big, big mistake not to have good insurance. The final piece to car insurance is limited tort and full tort. So I hear all the time, Jeff, I have full coverage.
Yeah.
And I always say, ma'am, do you have full tort, T-O-R-T? And they look at you bewildered. They don't know what you're talking about. And that always means to me that they've selected limited tort. And that means that we have to prove that you have sustained a serious impairment of a bodily function which is directly related to the accident. It's really hard to do. Just because you're rear-ended and the other person's at fault, the other defendant and insurance company will admit to liability, and they'll say, Mr. Nirenberg, I'm really sorry. We've denied your claim based on limited tort. Your client hasn't sustained a serious injury. So
what is the threshold for that? To determine what a serious and not injury is.
How does the accident affect your home, work, social activities? How does it affect your life? We look at the injury, but the injury isn't enough. The fractured wrist, the broken ankle, that's not even just enough. How did it affect your life? If you are a very active person who's involved in activities and work and coaches Little League and you can't do those things or you do less of them, well, that accident affected your life. A doctor has to write a report that these homework and social activities are serious in nature and you can win a limited tort case. If you're a person that gets hurt, isn't very active, and heals quickly, well, that might not be a serious injury in the eyes of the law and in the eyes of a judge or a jury or a mediator or an arbitration panel. So full tort coverage costs more money. It costs way more money in Center City, Philadelphia, in the Philadelphia region. As you push out to the suburbs, getting full tort insurance is a lot cheaper, but it's the difference between winning the case and winning a lot of money and losing the case and getting zero. So,
and the loss that is potential if somebody doesn't have full tort compared to the cost for it,
It's massive.
It's a game changer. What is PIP?
So PIP is personal injury protection. It's the monies used to pay your medical bills. So PIP benefits are called first party benefits. In Pennsylvania, the standard is $5,000 of PIP. Car insurance pays your first $5,000 of your medical bills, and then you move on to health insurance if you have it. PIP can be increased to whatever you want it to be. It's a buffet. It's a cafeteria. You select as much or as little as you'd like. I carry $100,000 of PIP because if I'm in a car accident, I want my medical bills to be paid through my car insurance, so I have higher PIP limits. But most people drive around with $5,000 of PIP, and then hopefully they have health insurance for when they exhaust the PIP. Other aspects are rental, car rental. Always make sure you have car rental. I mean, uninsured motorist, car rental, things like that are not very expensive. But when you're in a car accident and you need a car, having car rental is very important.
Why aren't people getting educated at these things? I know people are trying to get their own insurance, log into the website, and I'm assuming that they're not video tutorials on unlimited underinsured and uninsured motorists, or the difference between full tort and limited tort on the websites.
Simple reason: the defense bar and the insurance industry are winning the battle, and they're not just winning the battle by a little bit. It's a landslide. All the commercials, all the rhetoric, all of the tort reform, they're not there to educate the public on what they need to have good insurance, and the plaintiffs' lawyers haven't done enough to really educate the people. They've tried. There's been pushes throughout my career. We've made pamphlets. We've had seminars. We've tried to put brochures together, but we've lost the war. And people just buy insurance because they know they need to have it because it's the law of Pennsylvania and every state. And they never, ever ask the next questions, well, what type of insurance should I have? Should I have full tort? Do I have uninsured?
Wouldn't you think a broker, it's that their responsibility? And because everybody's got a guy.
They do have a guy, Joe, but we're buying direct now. If you've noticed, most things that we're doing right now, I just planned a Disney World trip. And I used to go through a travel agent. My mom's a travel agent. She's like, Jeff, call Disney.com, go on the website, or call the 1-800 number. Wait for 2 hours.
Right.
And book your trip. I don't do it anymore.
Well, it's interesting because...
And you're not being educated.
Yeah, it's not a priority to the... What's a priority to the company is just pay less, pay less, pay less. Theoretically, they're not lying. They're just not educating you on, if not for yourself, what about, your family, your children? But people just are not getting educated on that point. Talk about the contingency fee agreement.
So the contingency fee agreement is truly the game changer for a plaintiff's personal injury attorney, because it allows somebody with no money, with no means to fight a fight that they could never fight by themselves. So they hire a lawyer like me, or they hire a lawyer like Sonny Banks or any of the top attorneys, Tommy Kline, Bob Mongaluzzi, and the lawyer spends the time, the effort, the money to go after the case, investigate the case, and some of these cases, as you know, go on for years, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and can cost millions of dollars if you get involved in medical malpractice or products liability cases.
Yep.
So it allows David to fight Goliath and get a seat at the table. And the table is the courtroom. And you never ask your client for any money. There's no upfront costs. And the contingency fee says, if I win the case, I get paid. And the going rates are a third or 40% in a personal injury case and 20% in a workers' comp case. So the contingency fee has allowed the common person who's been horrifically wronged or hurt to hire a highly educated attorney. All of their staff have access to experts, weather reports, police reports, video, all types of things that they wouldn't otherwise have if there was no contingency fee.
It's amazing. I say it all the time every time I hear about that. Somebody walks in the office, they get your entire, you know, sometimes vetting the cases, sometimes you have to, you know, put out for experts and do those things before you even accept the case, right?
Absolutely. So sometimes you're into a case for $30,000, $40,000 that first month.
That's incredible.
And the key to some of these cases is vetting. You just mail, vetting the case and trying to figure out to pick the winners. It's an art form. It's something that can only be developed over time.
Are there some cases and some types of cases harder to pick than others? Like, so a car accident compared to a slip and fall. I know medical malpractice is a difficult area. Where, you know, some people that are, you know, their specialty is that they'll say that there are sometimes they'll investigate something for months before they even make a decision. But in your areas of expertise, are there different types of areas that take more vetting?
Sure. The slip and fall case is more time consuming, costly, but it can be more significant because there's just more available to you. With car insurance, we just mentioned half the people don't have car insurance, or a large percentage have a low amount of car insurance. In a slip and fall situation, you're generally suing a government entity or a private business. And by its nature, they have higher limits. So if you slip and fall at a supermarket or Target or Best Buy, they may have millions of dollars of insurance as opposed to $15,000 of car insurance. But the pushback and the fight in the slip and fall is much harder and much more time consuming and oftentimes requires experts that are very, very expensive. The car accident is more of a quick hitter in the sense that, all right, somebody blew a red light, there's a police report, there's clear liability, this person has $50,000 of insurance, we all know what's available, and wham, bam, you move forward and you settle a case.
And the vetting process probably isn't as complex.
Not at all. With slip and fall, you need pictures, you need full descriptions, you want incident reports, witnesses are so important. Weather conditions, weather reports. There are a million factors that go into the slip and fall that really don't come into play so much in the car accident. So to me, they're bigger cases, though. The slip and fall cases, if you're willing to spend the time, the effort, and the money and really sit with the client and develop the case, there's more available to you. But the car accident is pays the bills. The car accident is just a more finite, straightforward and simple way to help people get money, except when you get involved in this case we've been discussing, this drunk driver case, where there's a lot of different aspects.
Right, and again, that a lot of it depends on the auto insurance and being educated and understanding, you know, what the process is. I do want to cover one thing before we got about 10 minutes left. I think, you know, 8 sure. to 10 minutes left. But when you said something earlier about an individual, it reminds me of the Seinfeld episode where Kramer settled for all the coffee, right? You know, and Jackie Childs, which is right. You know, it's classic, right? I'll take it. Right, exactly, right.
But and, you could have got $1 million
right,
too.
You get, right, you got all the coffee you wanted. But are there some things that people should and shouldn't do at the scene of an accident, particularly if they're able to. So, you know, if it's not a catastrophic injury where they literally can't function and an ambulance, they end up in an ambulance, what are some things that individuals should do specifically at the beginning, I mean, at the scene and at the beginning of a case, and what they shouldn't do?
So if everybody did these things that we're about to talk about, it would make my job easier and the recoveries would be so much more substantial for the individual. But people get caught up in the emotions, their adrenaline is flowing, and they forget to do some of the most common things, such as the license plate. Get the license plate of the guy that hit you, all right? Oftentimes now in Philadelphia, almost all the times now, the cops and the police don't come out. They're only coming out when it's a bad accident.
Right.
And even then, they're supposed to come out when an ambulance is called. Half the time they come out, half the time they don't. So the burden falls on the plaintiff to gather and do and be their initial investigator. You're your own initial investigator until you hire a lawyer. So many people don't bring to me license plate, registration, insurance, driver's license. They have no information. And they come to me, and I have to say to them, but ma'am, you were in a car accident. You didn't get any information. How am I supposed to investigate and prosecute the case when I don't know the name of the driver? I don't have a tag. You didn't get any insurance information. And I do understand that sometimes getting this information is difficult.
Yeah.
We're in a very, very violent time, especially in our city in Philadelphia.
Sure.
I mean, I unfortunately turn on KYW in the morning for my 7 to 10 minutes.
Right.
And the lead story is always the same.
How many people were shot in the city?
How many people were shot? How many house fires there are? How many carjackings? This weekend there was an abduction of a family, where I don't know if you heard, where they took a husband, a wife, and two kids hostage in their house for 2 days while they made him go and take money out of his bank and at gunpoint, and there was, you know, assault. So
it's unbelievable.
The things going on in the city are crazy. So I understand that, you know, stopping and getting this information isn't always easy. But if the person stops and wants to be helpful, you have to at least ask the right questions. Take pictures of your car and their car. Get insurance information. Take pictures of the tag. As much information as you can get. If you see a
cell phone's got to be a massive benefit to individuals.
Yeah. Start snapping pictures. Start writing numbers down. If you see a couple people milling around, hey, did you see what happened? Would you tell me your name and phone number so I could find out, you know, from a witness what happened?
Now, and what about something they shouldn't do?
So what they shouldn't do is yell, scream, fight. It's easy to say. I mean, so many people get so emotional. They get rear-ended. There's a tap to their rear. There's a few hundred or a few thousand dollars of damage, but they want to fight the person, or they want to get into a verbal or even physical altercation. Don't do that.
And about taking phone calls from insurance adjusters.
That happens a lot.
Who are constantly trying to ask, how you feeling?
Don't give statements to insurance companies or anybody until you consult with a lawyer. And I always say this to people. What you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. It holds for personal injury law, criminal law. Statements made at any point that are either written or telephone recorded are going to be used against you later on.
I've heard stories where somebody, the adjuster, whoever that adjuster is, will ask, you know, on day one, you know, at the scene of the accident, how you feeling? Because they'll call their own adjuster. Next thing you know, it's an uninsured or underinsured motorist situation. They're in an adversarial situation with their own insurance company, and on tape. And by the way, they ended up having a catastrophic injury, or an injury that was really serious. But for a minute there, they're just being polite and saying, "I feel okay." 3 days later, you know, they can't touch their toes.
Stop talking. Stop talking.
Right. Well, I say that because the insurance company's protocols start right away. They're you know, and you know, people don't want to be litigious, and nobody does. But you have to. You have insurance for a reason. And so, you know, I mean, it's
taking it a step further. They'll offer you money sometimes too.
Yeah. Well, you just said $5,000 for a $500,000 case,
and that's happened 4 or 5 times in my career. And I've been able to undo one of them, and the other four, they signed a contract, they signed a release, it was over. There was one time, it was so horrific, that we were able to get it to $50,000 instead of five, but it was $500,000.
Unbelievable.
So people make mistakes.
Well, this has been the fastest hour in radio. Jeff, I want to congratulate you on your debut broadcast.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here and looking forward to doing this on a monthly basis with you and bring you on some exciting guests.
Well, I'm just as excited. And you're one of the things that I think listeners are going to get is you're such a welcoming person, passionate about your clients, but at the same time, a good listener. And I think that whenever somebody's in a vulnerable situation, that's what they want. They want a good listener. And, of course, they want somebody that's going to go out and get them justice. And, of course, Jeff Nierenberg is going to do that. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Legal Talk with Jeff Nierenberg. We are sponsored by Nierenberg Law Associates. And, of course, we're on WWDB Talk 860. On behalf of Jeff, I want to thank the listeners for tuning in. I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day.